Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, one of the great things about the College World Series is I didn't have enough time to pay attention to the Royals over the last week. Coincidentally, they've been winning baseball games, at least in a general sense, like not all the baseball games, unlike your team, Josh, but winning baseball games. And now I am met with news that the Royals have sent out, which is that Salvador Perez is having thumb surgery. And he is going to be on the injured list, and they say he is expected to return this season. So this seems like sort of a long-term thing.
Great. Welcome back. Bad week out in L.A. for the Royals.
Well, there were some good things. They won some games. They just got struck out a whole bunch by Shohei Ohtani and then lost their starting catcher for the majority of the season. So, no, you know, there's some good, some bad.
Look at you. Be in the light.
We're joined now on a Friday. Yeah, we're having a happy Friday. Brian Christofferson is with us. Hello, BC.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm very, very excited to dive back into the minutia of Royals baseball after basically taking a week off from the College World Series, just to realize that my favorite player is, one of my favorite players is, going to be out for almost the remainder of the season.
You know what, though? You got a World Series pretty recently, and just, you know, you got to take that and have joy in that and watch that again and again and again.
Oh, trust me, I will.
That play-in game or whatever, wild card game against Oakland, just like watch it on repeat on the tough days. That'll get you through this.
Oh, it does. Trust me. Spoken like a true Twins fan, though, BC. This is a discussion that I was having with people a couple weeks ago. The Twins have basically, you know, they've been a consistent team in the playoffs for for two decades now, basically in its entirety. It has yielded exactly zero playoff wins. The Royals have been god awful for almost the entirety of the last two decades, except for 2 years, and it led to two pennants and a World Series title. Whose last 20 years would you rather have?
That's a pretty good question, because there is something to be said for your team just giving you that summer of bliss where you're like in it and it's got your attention every day pretty consistently. Like, that's a pretty good thing. And that's sometimes all I demand out of the Twins. They don't necessarily expect us to do much in the playoffs, as I shouldn't. give me a summer. Give me through August where I'm like, yeah, this is worth my time for 3 hours if I devote myself to it. I just got back from the Twins Guardian, and I'm disappointed that in watching the Guardians up close, their lineups, I like it kind of. Like, I like how it's forming and Stephen Kwan. And I sort of didn't take them seriously. And after I left, I was like, crap. You know, like, they've sort of got like a team of guys who just, you know, hustle and they get on base. I don't like it. So my mind immediately went to the worst thing that's happening right now, which is the Cleveland Guardians being on the rise and my coworker Schaefer being overjoyed by it.
Oh, man. And then him just sitting there, like, enjoying, and Jose Ramirez is just going to be a part of his life for the next 10 years, and he's like, I love it here, and I love everything about Cleveland, and I'll take a pay cut, and we're just going to be competitive. Like, that's the situation you want to be in as a fan.
Well, it's awesome for the Royals fans out there. I mean, Bobby Witt, I will say, as a competitor to him, is going to be one of those guys who's a pain in the tuchus to everybody who's not a Royals fan for a good long time. And so you take joy in guys like that, and then you just hope you find a nucleus. You know, you need like four or five guys like that in your everyday lineup and a couple good arms, and then you can make stuff happen in our division.
Oh, that's... Yeah, it can happen pretty quick, especially when Tony La Russa is still still in charge over there in Chicago.
Yeah, thank goodness for that, right?
Yeah, we like that. Extend Tony La Russa. We're getting that petition going. BC, okay, let's talk some football. So I actually, the Bear, Chris Felico, was tweeting out some stats this week, and he said something. We talked about this a couple days ago on the show. I want to get your thoughts on it. So Iowa was actually outgained last season in totality. They got, on average, just a little under 304 yards per game, and they gave up about 330 yards per game. That team won 10 games, largely because they went plus 10 in the turnover category, and they were, you know, as always, really good, airtight on special teams. Nebraska, on the other hand, has not had a season in which they have been outgained since... you know, in Scott Frost's tenure, it's resulted in losing seasons, nothing but losing seasons so far. I mean, there's no better stat for me that sort of compares the two programs and what they value and what they're sort of about than right there for me.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa is I don't know what their stats are long term on the plus minus with turnovers. But when they're really good, it feels like they're always almost like a double-digit plus kind of team. And that squad last year, I mean, it was obvious they had a lot of flaws on offense, and it showed from start to finish. But it doesn't matter when your defense gives you the ball at the 5-yard line, you know, for drive. And I saw that happen a bunch of times. And special teams, I always bring up the stat that Nebraska's net punt last year was about 35 yards or something like that. And the opponent's net punt when playing Nebraska was like 42. That's every punt. So you're talking about a 7-yard advantage in real estate in every punt exchange in games Nebraska played last season. And when you're looking at a team that was 3-9 and played these, you know, oddball games where you're right there and it's like one play away, you know, you add up 49, 50 yards of real estate based off that alone, net punting or something like that, that takes place during a game. Well, there you go, maybe, right? I mean, that's maybe the difference between the 3-point loss and the 4-point win. And so, yeah, I mean, it's that we're back to that topic, which is, I think, the key topic. It's what can Bill Bush and that crew get done. Can it be the type of unit like Iowa had, where they look at film of their opponent and they say, we don't hope we can block a punt, we see why we're going to block a punt. And Iowa did that to Nebraska, and it changed that whole game and decided it. And that was not luck. It was Iowa seeing a flaw that Nebraska had in its punt unit and saying, we're going to exploit that. We know it's going to happen. It's just a matter of executing, and they did it. And so that's where you want to see if Nebraska special teams can, you know, make a move there where it's, you're not just hoping to keep your head above the water, but you're actually like seeing like, this is how we expect to, you know, break it open on that with that unit. And that's what Iowa did well.
Well, when Nebraska coaches talk about being close, and I know it sort of gets annoying sometimes, and, you know, we like to poke holes in that and sort of make fun of it as well. At least, you know, we've spent a fair amount of time, I think, doing so. And then when you hear, like, the preseason prognostications of, like, hey, this is a team that could, you know, easily rebound, that's where they're getting that. I mean, Nebraska in the bulk stats, you know, it has the profile of a team that one would win way more than three games, certainly, and probably closer to 8 or 9 just by looking at them from a statistical standpoint. But then when you include that other stuff, it just tanks them so bad. So it's easy to see why, like, where they get the we're close thing. But at the same time, like you said, it's easier said than done. It's been an issue for Nebraska for a while.
Yeah, and that's where the skeptics come in. They say, okay, I would give you that if this was like a one-year odyssey, you know, where it's like, oh, that was a strange season. But I think Nebraska faithful have seen enough of that data that they're like, when is that? When do you get beyond that? That's just like an unfortunate, you know, like, oh man, that was strange. And that's like, no, that's normal, you know, like strange is normal. And so I think that's where Husker fans are at. But I understand, you know, we're a very metrics based with our sports now, like everything, you know, everybody likes to dive into the stats and stuff. And yeah, Nebraska's numbers as a whole in a lot of categories, you would look at them and you'd say, that was a better football team, you know, way better than 3-9, you know, maybe like you're saying, like maybe it's a 7-8 type win team. And that's where you're getting these prognostications from the outside. And I don't think it's too much to ask, frankly. When you look at Nebraska's schedule and the way it sets up, I'll go on the record and say Nebraska needs to make that move where I'm not saying to go win the West, but I'm saying it's not asking for the world for Nebraska to be in that conversation with 2 to 3 weeks left in November,
right,
with this schedule. That should be an every year occurrence and frankly an every year expectation, that in the last couple of weeks we're looking at it like Nebraska has to do this, this squad has to do that, that's how they would win the West. They shouldn't be like out of the talk completely, and that's probably been the most discouraging thing, is that you're not even in that conversation in a division that is frankly very winnable and is meant for a team like Nebraska this year, if you want to be an optimist, to make a move. There's nothing that's saying you couldn't make a move in that division with where teams are at right now.
Well, look at the win totals that have sort of come out, at least how it's being bet on. You sort of have Iowa and Wisconsin on, you know, that seems to be they've got the respect of the bettors and the sports books over the years of like, yeah, we can sort of just expect these teams to be a little bit higher. And then there's a group. It includes Nebraska, Minnesota, and Purdue, and they're all right in the same range. And you could basically, you know, get the same sort of return if you bet on any of their overs or any of their chances to even win the division. I think who emerges out of those three and who tanks out of those three, not that one of them has to, I mean, that's going to tell you a lot of the story about this division this year. Out of those three, Nebraska included, which is sort of the most intriguing to you? Nebraska, Minnesota, and Purdue.
I think that Minnesota game with Nebraska, kind of grouping them together, it's the first Saturday in November. And everybody's talking about how difficult Nebraska's stretch to the finish line is, and it is. But there's also a runway to build up confidence and optimism beyond the beginning of this season, in the middle of the season, where the Nebraska plays Purdue, Illinois at home, and Minnesota at home. And that's a pretty key three-game stretch there in the middle of the year, talking about all the teams that you just brought up, where you'd love to see Nebraska just handle its business against those type of squads now. And Minnesota, if you look at what the Gophers have done, not only has Nebraska kind of drove its season into the ditch against the Gophers the last few years, one of the more annoying parts is think about how they've elevated other squads in the division by not showing up in those games and the narrative that they've created and changed for, like, Minnesota. If you look at the last 3 years, all those years, Nebraska really crushed where its direction was going. And that includes 2020, when Nebraska had a chance to kind of finish out that weird season at 500 in the COVID year. And they lost to that undermanned Minnesota squad. Minnesota that year was struggling.
Yep.
And PJ Fleck was hearing a lot of noise. Like, okay, people are kind of tired of the wind sprints down the sideline and all that, you know, kind of his way of operating when the wins aren't coming. And that game kind of let him off the hook for that offseason. And it built. And then last year, if you think about Minnesota, remember they lose a terrible non-con game where everybody's kind of laughing at them. And a couple weeks later, they win that game against Nebraska where the Huskers, you know, did not show up well in the first half. changed Nebraska's direction, and all of a sudden, the next few weeks, we're like, hey, Minnesota's like in the conversation for the division, you know, like with the schedule now it's set up. I mean, so it's been twofold. Nebraska's had these opportunities against Iowa and Minnesota that are right there for the taking, and just have not grabbed them. And they've elevated teams that are they're recruiting directly against, and all this stuff. And you know, that's an unfortunate kind of double play on Nebraska's misfortune. In
that's a fantastic point. I mean, the first one that popped in my head after you said that was 19, because I mean, that's the year Minnesota won 11 games, and remember, they started pretty slow. They were winning games.
They were struggling.
But they were sort of like, is this team real? The week before they got Nebraska, they beat Illinois pretty good. And I remember going into that week, it was sort of built up to be like, this is a big game. Nebraska got housed that night in the sleet in Minnesota. And all of a sudden, Minnesota gets to the point where they're 8-0 before they play Penn State. And then there it was. Like, You're totally right about that, how it sort of, that Minnesota game provides a sort of fork in the road for both teams because of when they play in the season. Now they play them a little bit later than this year, but also what happens after. It's a really good case study.
Yeah, and everybody I talk to keeps saying, well, if Nebraska's not, you know, 5-1 after their first six games because of the way the schedule sets up, it's going to be really rough because there's no way they're going to finish strong and all that stuff. And that football's weird. You know how it switches momentum within the season. All I'm saying is, let's say Nebraska started the year like 4-2 against that schedule. There's that three-game stretch where they play at Purdue, they host Illinois, they host Minnesota before the big finish against Michigan, Wisconsin, and Iowa. And that's going to be the scale tipper, I think, in some ways. Like, which direction are you going? Are you giving yourself a chance for a November to remember, as Bill Callahan used to say? not with great popularity, but he said that before one bad November then happened.
Didn't work out.
yeah, but you got to at least give yourself that shot. And it's interesting that question you posed about the teams of Purdue and Minnesota, because you can easily latch on to other games on that schedule. I look at it and I say, if you talk about most important games, and let's just get past that they all are, because we know that. But Nebraska's got to break through and end that drought. That's number one to me. But Minnesota, where it falls on the schedule and what's happened and how that's affected both programs, that's frankly number two to me because of, I mean, think about if you lose that game and then you're going to Michigan the next week, and you know, that's a tough deal. But if you have played well in that three-game stretch prior to the final three, and you're relatively healthy, and you know, Nebraska's, then it's exciting around here, and we've got a different conversation than we've had in past years. And so it's right there on the table. I think it can happen for this squad, but I understand where people are just like, let's just see this squad. Because there's 33 new guys that are on scholarship, and I'm like a lot of people. It's like, I don't know exactly what to expect. I think it could be really good, but they got a lot of work to do still on offense to figure out how they're going to gel and all that stuff. And so it is one of the great – it's like those mystery suckers, you know, you used to get at the Village Inn in the front that have purple wrapping with the question marks. That's like how I feel about Husker football now. You don't know exactly what's under that wrapper.
Well, BC, okay, so I've been through this before. So they're going to be favorites in 7 out of their first 8. The Oklahoma spread is going to be relatively tight. So that'll only be right now it's 4.5 or something like that. That's what people sort of view to be a game that you can win as well. I've been telling people this stat. Nebraska is, in the Scott Frost era, by my count, 13-11 outright in games in which they are favorites. So 13-11 in games they're supposed to win. Now you could convince yourself that they can win 7 out of those first 8, but it could also go the other way where you're like, well, they haven't won those games consistently, and there's going to be one or two in there. You just can't pick them out. That's what makes it so difficult to kind of go through, you know, in the preseason.
That's exactly it. Like, yeah, it's easy to say, well, they'll be favored. You know, they should be 5-1. I mean, they could be, but that's where everybody around here is like, no, that doesn't compute, because you got to also run the numbers that they're basically just 500, as you mentioned, in those games. And so they could just as easily be 3-3. And until they prove otherwise, there's nothing I would say. I would not argue in any sort of loud voice against anybody who says, yeah, I'm not just going to nod my head to that. But my brother and I, driving back from the Twins Guardians the other day, we were having a funny conversation. He's like, yep, this is the time of year when everybody looks at that schedule and they talk themselves into like, yeah, I could, you know, they're going to win this one and that one. And you end up like, oh, I see them going 9-3. You know, like people start like working their way toward that thing in their mind, which is, I guess, not bad to be an optimist in nature. But the schedule is there, though. This is a different schedule than last year. And I don't think Indiana, for that's a big game, you know, on October 1st. That's a team that was 2-10 last year, and so you could easily wave your hand and dismiss them. I wouldn't do that because I think that last year might have been an exception to sort of what they're building. That could be a tough game. Rutgers, it could be a tough game. On a Friday night, they're on a short week, and Greg Schiano's a good coach. And they can, on certain weeks, go to battle with a lot of different teams in the Big Ten and compete to the end with them. So, all over this schedule, there's not one game where you just say, well, that's a 2-foot putt for Nebraska. That's the thing, you know. They're going to have to putt at a very high percentage on the 4-5-foot putts, which if you're a putter like me on the golf course, is not a high percentage.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be put in that situation a whole bunch of times either. BC, appreciate the time as always. Have a good weekend.
Yep, thanks, Connor.
Brian Christofferson of Husker 24/7. Yep, I mean that's the crux of it right there. I love that thought though, on the Minnesota game. I mean, he's totally right about the season sort of just splitting off afterwards and going in different directions. Now, the game against Minnesota this year is actually in November. This game usually takes place in early October. At least it has over the past couple of years. So where it's one of your first couple conference games, and you sort of, you know, you get to measure yourself a team that you want to measure yourself against. And Nebraska's obviously failed that test over the last couple of years, and their season split off because of it. But he's right on the Minnesota side of things too. Look at where they've gone after they have beaten Nebraska. Man, that would be nice to flip that script this year. I think he's dead on about that one. That's an important game. And it's the first of those four in November against Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Iowa. All right, we'll have the odd news coming up next. We do have a tweet bag today, so get your questions in for that at Happer Show. Since we didn't do it on Wednesday, we'll just we'll let it fly today. So we'll come back with odd news, and then we'll get to the tweet bag. Send them in at Happer Show. More up next on 1620 The Zone.
You've worked hard for what you have. Your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.